Howdy do, buckaroos. This is the after show with Mike and Kelly. I am hosting this evening on intro duties, Kelly Gamont. And with me tonight, I have formerly stuffy Mike T. Rose.
How is it going, Kelly?
Good. I'm mostly healthy. I don't sound like it right now because for some reason I had a coughing fit right before we hit record. But there we go.
Yeah, all clear.
I'm doing well.
Clear the baffles is the important thing to do before you start podcasting. Good to hear. I am also mostly unstuffy. And as anyone who listened to the last show knows that I was oddly silent when you were talking. That's because I had to mute. I had to knock out everything every time I wasn't talking because I had such bad hiss coming through. I have discovered I really need to turn my Drobo off when we're recording. only been podcasting now for 10 years.
Yeah.
And just discovered that this is a thing. So, you know.
Yeah.
Now we know.
Today I learned.
And I also need, I think when we do move, when we do end up in a new house, I'm going to have some acoustic, anechoic tile and foam put up because we're just upping our game for the 1-6 for 2016.
Yeah.
Happy New Year.
And you know, we were talking about that because, I actually am looking to upgrade some audio gear myself.
Yes, so. Indeed. You have an interface that is no longer inter or facing.
Yes. Yeah. Mostly, it's it's turned its back on me in disgust, and I'm not really sure why.
That's unfortunate. So,
yeah.
It's like, what have I done? You know what you did, Kelly. You know what
exactly.
You did.
It's very, it seems very passive aggressive. Like, I've asked it what I do, and it's basically like, well, if you don't know, I'm not about to tell you.
Yeah, come on.
somehow that turned Siri on. So, Siri. And oh my, wow. I don't even know what she's talking about.
You know what you did, and I'm not going to tell you. That gets interpreted as, hey, Siri, just hashtag the more you know.
I don't know what's happening now.
It's your turn. Because remember, a couple months ago, I was talking and the Amazon Echo started randomly playing happy birthday.
That's right. That's really funny.
We're not saying they're listening to everything we're saying, but they're really listening to everything we're saying.
But they're totally listening.
They're totally listening.
And in fact, funny thing, and I want to hear from our listeners if anyone else has seen this same issue. And that issue is that I was at a friend's house. I was visiting Jean McDonald. We were at her house. And she had asked me something, and it was something that I needed to do when I got home. So I whipped out my phone, and I invoked it. And I don't want to do it now because my phone can hear me. And I said, hey, and then remind me about da-da-da-da-da when I get home. And her phone also picked it up. And I thought part of the thing with the new phones was that it was supposed to be your voice. So that when I say it, it doesn't make my phone and Mr. Kelly's phone go off at the same time. But apparently that's not what's happening. I don't know.
Or maybe maybe you have one of those things where the more time you spend with someone, the more you tend to sound like them.
Well, I assumed that it was something like that, that maybe it was just that. I'm hoping it's just that simple that, like, whatever algorithm it is that says this is your voice, that Gene and I are similar enough that it decided, okay.
Well, you know, maybe it's a app camp for girls thing.
Like it could be.
There's a piece of code in there that says if person equals organizer of App Camp for Girls, then activate Hey Siri. But anyway, but what are
it's
you
entirely possible.
What are you shopping for in terms of audio gear?
I am shopping for, this is more reader input, listener input, not even reader input. Let's try that again. I'm shopping for an audio interface, and this is something that I could really use listener input on. I am looking for something that goes between XLR and USB. So I have an XLR microphone. It's a microphone from Blue. It's not a Yeti. It's a straight Encore 100. Beautiful XLR microphone, at least for me. And something I'm going to tell everybody, because this is going to be probably end up being a little bit behind the scenes kind of a show. But you should try different microphones. If you're looking to get one, try a few out and record your voice. And what I would do is I would have somebody who is not you listen to you being recorded on these different microphones, because that way you will sound the same to them and they will be able to go, oh, this is the mic that you sound the best on. Because there's a little bit of compatibility that happens with that. And you can't always tell what mic is going to be the most compatible with your voice, depending on a whole bunch of factors. So it's good to try out a few and, you know, record a little audio of that, send it off to somebody, because they know what you sound like all the time. When I listen to myself, all I can hear is, oh my God, is that really what I sound like? Why am I still talking? Because how I sound in my head is very different than how I sound to all of you. So if you're looking and you can get the opportunity to try a few. I found a mic that totally works for me, which is this Blue Encore 100 microphone. And it's XLR. So I have the XLR going into this little really old M Audio podcast factory interface. And then that interface runs in a USB cable back around behind my monitor and into my laptop. So the interface has sort of started showing signs of old age, basically, because it's really old. And they are things like the live monitor where I plug in the headphone jacks, just where I plug in the headphones. Sometimes the headphone jack just sort of gives out in mid-recording and all of a sudden I can't hear anything. And once in a while, the gain, like I'll turn up the gain when I need to and it doesn't always like take the first time. And it has started to occasionally disappear from my computer, as this evening when we started the Skype call. Mike said, you don't sound quite as, and I'm like, good. Well, yeah. Well, clearly my audio interface has disappeared. So now I get to restart my computer and try to convince it to come back to me. So yeah, I'm looking for something else. If you are using or know someone who uses an XLR interface on the regular with their Mac or their Windows machine, I won't judge. If you've got one that's awesome, then let me know and let me know why. And really my requirements are that it have gain and that it have a live monitor. And it doesn't even have to be a box. Like there's the Blue Icicle, which is something I'm sort of considering maybe going to.
Yep, the Blue Icicle Shure. And the Shure, they both are these inline XLR to USB converters. So yeah,
Shure makes this other thing that looks kind of cool. So if you're using one of those, tell me about it and tell me why. And that would be amazing. And maybe I can get back to a reliable recording setup, and that would be phenomenal.
Yeah, and I mean, Behringer has a bunch of these. Presonus and Focusrite have a bunch of them. As longtime listeners know, I am using an Audio Technica mic that has a built-in AD converter and does USB direct out, because I'm just lazy that way. But yeah, if you've got an XLR, if you've got an audio mixer, an XLR to USB converter that you like, tell Kelly and she will not only will she appreciate it, she will credit you on the air.
I absolutely will. And once I have that gorgeous new audio interface and I sound even better than I do right now, I will say really nice things about you on the show.
Oh boy. So it's a little bit of a nostalgic week here at the home office.
It totally is.
At the home office in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Well, first of all, we're looking down the barrel.
I thought the home office was in Wahoo, Nebraska.
It's, oh my gosh, we talked about this. we have relocated from Wahoo, Nebraska.
Okay. It's just because, like, I listened to Letterman my whole life tell me the home office was in Wahoo, Nebraska. I just don't know any better.
It's in a lot of places. It depends. Okay. It depends whose home is the office this week.
This is true.
We're looking down the barrel of a potentially big snowstorm next weekend here on ye East Coast.
Yay, snowpocalypse.
Yay, snowpocalypse. So, but that, you know, that is not why we're looking back. We're looking back because this is often historically a week where there was a Macworld Expo another event. But the thing that I'm looking at is from January 18th of January 2011. It's actually a Daring Fireball post. Mm-hmm. So, but it references my brush with history. when it comes to the iPad. So back in April of 2010, early April 2010, right before the iPad, the original iPad went on sale, I was on the internet TV, the fake internet TV, with Clayton Morris, Jason Snell, Andy Anatko, Ross Rubin, Natalie Del Conte, later Natalie Morris, and Clayton Morris, and John Gruber. And most of us were actually in the same room together in New York. Jason was attending remotely. And the question was asked, what did we think was going to be the total number of iPads, sold in 2010?
Because this had just been announced, if I'm not mistaken, right?
It had been announced for a while, but it was about to ship.
Oh, so that's what it was.
The day before it shipped. And you can actually watch the clip on YouTube. It's still there. So you can hear and see everybody making their predictions for how many iPads would sell during the year to come. And so at the end, back in January, after Apple announced results, John went back and checked everybody's numbers. And the guesses ranged from a low of 3 million, which Andy and Jason put their finger on. John was at 8 million. Ross was at 5 million. Natalie was at 5 million. I was about at 5 million as well. Clayton said 9 million, and we all said he was insane.
Now, keep in mind, for people who need a little bit of historical context here, so 2010 would have been, we were still, the current model of iPhone was the iPhone 3G, which was the second one, right? Because we didn't get the 3GS until later in the year.
Mm-hmm.
So we're on basically the second iPhone. So you know how now, like, you can listen to somebody say they're going to sell 3 million iPads in 3 months and you can laugh at that number, because we've had how many successful, you know, crazy iPhone stampedes since then. So when you think about it in those terms, like, it sounds really funny. But at the time, operating on the information that you had, like, of course, this all, you know, 3 million sounded like a really reasonable number, because this wasn't the unbelievable powerhouse Apple. People are lining up at the Apple store because an invitation went out today. So they're just all hanging out in front of the Apple store on spec. That wasn't the Apple that we were dealing with at that point. So keep that in mind as you listen to these numbers.
Right. So those were the numbers. And the actual number, the number closest to the actual number without going over, was 14.8 million. So everybody was way low. Now, of course,
keep in mind that everybody laughed at Clayton's 9 million number.
Yeah, everybody laughed at Clayton's 9 million number. Now, the interesting fact is that, you know, iPad sales now are in the
squillions.
Well, they're in the squillions, but they're in the 75 million units per year range. But they've been declining. They've been trending downwards since the peak. I think the peak to date was the holiday quarter of 2013.
Yeah, I think so.
Which was with 26 million. So since then, the holiday quarter of I think the holiday quarter last year was around 21. So they are no longer on that crazy upward trajectory, but that's just an interesting point in time thing that, you know, where we were 5 years ago today was finding out for the first time how astonishing that was, that the pent-up demand for the Apple tablet. And remember, this is the iPad 1 we're talking about. Heavy. Like, you know,
oh,
like
that thing was a monster.
Yeah, I've got one in a drawer. They're extremely heavy.
Yeah, and you'll have to take it out of that drawer. You won't be able to lift that piece of furniture when you move.
Why won't this empty cabinet allow itself to be removed from this room? Oh, there's an iPad 1.
Oh, we found an iPad in the bottom drawer. Oh, right?
That explains it. Stuck between the drawers is an iPad 1. Well, that explains the whole thing. Anyway, that was 5 years ago today. That was just something that Time Hop reminded me of. Mm-hmm. It's a tribute day to Time Hop. Thank you, Time Hop, for telling us about everything wonderful that happened in the past. Or not so wonderful.
Well, yeah, some of it, admittedly not so wonderful. Mine, when I flip through TimeHop today, and I basically do this every day because I'm always interested in what random stuff went by. My favorite was in the olden days of Twitter, which in internet time could have been, you know, last summer, but it was really more like 6, 7, 8 years ago. one of the things we used to do was play hashtag games. Mike remembers this, I'm sure. You know, movie quotes with pants was one. Meaty Morrissey was one where I think I put up like the Meaty Morrissey ones. I think I put up something like meat is murder, tasty, tasty murder. And then some other, you know, some other equally, I think I have screenshots of them because the ones where I thought I was being particularly funny, I took pictures of. And I have from 8 years ago today, there was, I was at Macworld Expo.
Mm-hmm.
And
as one should be.
Yes, with no capital W. I was there because I worked for Extensis at the time, and they took me there to be one of the people who gave a presentation in the booth. And what was interesting about the presentations we were doing in the booth was that when you sat down to get the presentation, we would give you these little boxes, and then you would sort of cast votes on things. As I was giving the presentation, I would go, okay, now here's a part where I'm going to get input from you guys. What's, you know, what about this? What about that? And one of the things that we asked in 2008, yeah, 2008, was, are you or people in your company still using Classic as an emulation layer? And if I got anything from people that said yes, I would invite them to join us in the current century. And at one point I made a joke about, like, I don't know if you've heard, but Apple makes phones now. It's amazing. And so it was so much fun to get to sort of, you know, crack jokes and stuff with people. And then at one point, Andy Anatko, also from your TimeHop story, mm-hmm. Had tweeted something about, like, does anyone have any swag left? I don't feel like doing laundry, or something like that. And, you know, like prowling for t-shirts. So I was like, I have a t-shirt. So I replied to him and I said, come by the Extensis booth and I'll hook you up. I'm in the shirt that says I'm the geeky type, because everybody had a different type on the back of their shirt. Cause there was, it was font server
type. This was, that's like the dad joke of convention wardrobe.
It absolutely was. And everybody, you know, I'm the creative type. I'm the this, I'm the that. And so they were like, so Kelly, here's yours. And like, it was sort of this, please don't be mad. And I'm like, yeah, that would be me. So, okay. I don't understand what people are worried about. So, anyway, so he did come by and I did get a chance to meet him and I was very starstruck. And what I ended up doing was blurting out how I built a Macquarium based on his instructions, and he was right. It no longer works very well with Word 6. And because there's like two disclaimers at the front of the instructions, like you're probably, you know, you're dismantling your computer to do this. So it may void your warranty, but some places may not notice. And then the second one was, it won't work very well with Word 6, but it probably didn't work that well with Word 6 anyway. So you may not be missing out on anything. So I used those, instructions and some know-how from Mr. Kelly, whose dad used to run a fiberglass shop. And so we were able to put together one that looks really cool. I still have it. It makes me very happy. It's sitting over here in the corner of my office. They're in a fish in it right now. But anyway, the other thing, so that was like my first encounter with Andy Anatko. And what's really funny is that a couple of times within the last year, he has invited me to be on Mac Break Weekly with him. And so, to me, it's really funny to look back on how, you know, 8 years ago I was like, oh, you're like a god, and now like he's in my phone, yeah. You know, and it's amazing.
That is the wonderful thing about my first postulate of fandom, which is that everyone is famous to someone else.
Yeah,
and. And now in our modern age, we actually are able to discover that when it happens, which is wonderful and life affirming and a great thing, but also creates these weird loops.
Yes.
that you don't know about until they're exposed, and suddenly, I think what happened, this happened to me, most recent time this happened to me, I think was involved, as it usually does, Veronica Belmont. because she is the nexus of strange fandom loops. So I was a fan of Veronica's before I met her, and then I met her, and then, you know, we became acquaintances and, you know, Twitter buddies and so forth. So, like, I felt that I was at the point, like, I could send her an email and you know, be able to engage her on something, which was true. And then, separately and apart, Naomi Novik, who writes and wrote the Temeraire series of books, is also an acquaintance because she's married to an old friend of mine. And at some point I said, hey, you know, Naomi, would you ever want to be on Veronica's podcast? Hey, Veronica, would you want to ever want to have Naomi on your podcast? And it was like an explosion of fandom, like, oh, bi-directional weird fandom. It's like, how did I end up in the middle of this? This is so strange. And everyone was very excited.
Oh, you mean like
excited.
The time you were like, oh, yeah, I went to school with Javi and I fainted?
That would be the other one. Yes. That would be the other example. So, yes. Emmy Award-winning producer on Lost, comic author, sci-fi author,
the middleman. You guys, oh my God, you guys, the middleman.
ABC Family's the middleman, and now he is one of the EPs for the Xena reboot.
I know
Xena, the Warrior Princess. Javier Grigio Marks watch. Kelly is a huge fan of his work. And yeah, so he and I.
So I made some joke about the middleman, or like from the middleman or something, to Mike one time. And Mike goes, or no, I think I retweeted him. And you were like, that's so funny. We went to school together. And I'm like,
not only did we go to school together, he was a columnist at the newspaper when I was an editor there. So I edited him.
So it's not like you just sort of, like, you were both in the same place at the same time. Like, you had an actual relationship.
But we were and are friends. We both worked at the newspaper.
We went to school together. We still hang out.
Yeah, actually.
I think I fell off the couch.
I mean, the last time I saw him was actually randomly in Las Vegas, but it was awesome that we found out, like we just found out with a day's notice that we were going to be there at the same time. And I was staying at the MGM. He was having dinner in the MGM. So it was fun. It was delightful.
That's awesome.
But separate and apart from that. So yes, we were classmates. We were both English majors. We had a bunch of classes together. We both worked at the newspaper, and actually we both were in Scotch and Soda, which was the amateur theatrical. So I directed him.
Oh my God.
In a Woody Allen review. He directed me in a couple of things, actually. I was in a play that he wrote. No, Heidi was in a play that he wrote. No, I was in a play that he wrote too, come to think of it, actually.
Oh my God.
And yeah. So yeah, we were definitely
doing
lots of stuff together in college. So yeah, and then of course he went off and became famous, as we knew he would. No, I'm not even kidding here.
You always know when you.
Well, you don't always know. Sometimes you're wrong. But in this case, yeah. I will back this up from my wife's experience, because when she was in a play he wrote, she took the script to him and had him sign it.
Oh my God!
She said, "I'm keeping this for when you're famous."
Oh, that's amazing.
So she knew. There was never any doubt. Anyway,
that's so funny.
So that is a circle of internet fame that is that is weird.
So the other one that still entertains me is ours.
Yes. That is pretty funny.
So for people who don't know, here's the story of how Mike and I met almost exactly nine years ago
this month, yes.
Give or take like days, I think, honestly, because it was the 2007 Macworld Expo debut of the iPhone. It was that.
No, because I wasn't there that year. I was not there for the debut of the iPhone. I was there the year after.
Okay, so then it was like 8 years ago tomorrow, because it was Macworld Expo. And so, and that was the one that I was just tweeting at Inotco, that that's what I was talking about. So yeah, it's like give or take 8 years from this day. Mm-hmm. So January 18th. I was at Macworld Expo, and like I said, I was in the Extensis booth, and Extensis had just put together this font server that suitcase server, they were calling it. And or not suitcase server, type server.
Advanced type server. Extensis type server.
It was a very long time ago. It was also a very long day. I got to go to the iPhone Steve Note. And in order to do so, I had to get up at something like 2:30 in the morning. So I like went to bed, took a power nap. It was like a disco nap. And then I woke up and had to go be presentable in the world and go wait in this line. And so I got in this line, and I was one of the last people that got into the actual room and didn't get kicked over to the overflow room. And I got in line at 3 a.m. Keep this in mind. So I'm a little punchy. I'm still having to go give these presentations in the booth with the little dials or anything, like all of that's the same. And so it was crazy to sit there and try to do all of this. And so I'm standing outside on the outside edge of the booth where I can demo type server to people. And this guy walks up and he says, "Hi, what have you got to, you know, what are you showing off here?" And I said, "Well, this is a server-based font management system from Extensis. They make Suitcase." And he goes, "Oh, okay. Well, what can you tell me about it?" So I start going into like the little, like the high level demo, like here's what's easy about it. Here's why it's great, because you can, you can assign fonts to different groups. You can make sure that all your licensing is in compliance. And then he stops me and he goes, "That sounds really great. Do you mind if I shoot some video?" And I'm like,
now,
okay.
By the way, guys, if you're listening, great line. I'm just saying, that is a line that will almost never fail.
So,
that's great. I love what you're explaining. Do you mind if I shoot some video?
Do you mind if I get some video?
Suave, suave to the max.
So I'm like, sure. So he gets out his digital camera and starts recording. And I'm sad that this video is apparently now lost to the ages.
I think it is.
Well, I'm only a little bit sad. Mostly I'm not sad. And he says, "This is Mike Rose with the unofficial Apple weblog. I'm on the show floor at Macworld Expo, and Kelly here is going to talk to us about Extensis Type Server." And then, like, points at me. And there's the briefest instance of deer in headlights that washes over my face as he says this. And then I go into the demo, and I give my demo, and I do a decent job, I think. And then he stops recording and goes, "All right, thanks a lot." And then he goes to leave, and I'm like, no. You're not getting away that easy. So I'm like, I applied to write for you guys, and I applied to write for you guys, and I applied to write for you guys. And it says like, you'll hear back. And I never heard back. And I don't know why I didn't hear back. Like, I'm assuming I didn't get it, but I never heard back. So I don't know. So like, I'm kind of an optimist. And it was approximately that speed and approximately twice that many words, honestly, I think. And Mike's like, "Well, I'll give you a card and let's, you know, send me an email.
Yeah.
Let me see what I can find out." So that was like right about the time he was leaving, if I'm not mistaken. And that's why I never heard back.
Well, it was that and the fact that we always had, when we did send out a call for submissions, we ended up in under a giant pile. And it was never, I mean, you're keeping in mind that this goes back way into Weblogs Inc. history, but the way that when Jason Kalkanis and Brian Alvey and the original crew founded Weblogs, they had a very, one piece of their secret sauce was that when they recruited writers, they asked for three original writing samples. So people had to do three posts in the style of whatever they were applying to write for. And This was a great way to understand people's writing style and their skill level. When you got 15 applications for a position,
when it's 106,
right? What that standard of evaluation did not account for was a scaling factor that meant that I think when I originally applied to write for the site, I was one of 300 plus applications that round. And later on, when I was involved in actually reviewing applications, there were never fewer than 500 or 600 we sent out a request. So if it takes you 15 minutes to read and evaluate one person's submission,
and now you have 500.
Yeah. So it is a matter of several weeks for several people, and it always fell to the bottom of the stack, and it meant that stuff basically we would do our best to review them, and some things you could eliminate relatively quickly, but it took us a long time just to get back to people and say, we heard from you, and then to actually hire anybody took forever. And so what would end up happening is in some cases we would find people through those processes and Scott and then Victor after him and Dave and I, we worked pretty diligently to try to get through them. But sometimes we would find people through that process. Other times we would go out and solicit people and say, please apply out of band.
Yeah.
Because if you come in through the front door, we're never going to get to you. So,
right.
So all that said, yes. And also Scott was leaving. I remain apologetic for how that
which
went
you don't
down.
Have to, because it wasn't you. So then I followed you on Twitter.
Yes.
And we started talking, and then you said you were coming to Portland. And the reason I remember this is because I sent you a note and I said, hey, we do this thing where like nerds hang out and drink beer on Friday afternoons. Do you want to come? And you replied to me and you said, maybe. I have gotten more invitations for 3 days in Portland than I have in the previous year here in New York, which is why I remember it.
Yeah.
But you did come. You did come to Beer and Blog with us and hang out. And I said, yeah, so I don't work at Extensis anymore. So the whole I work for a publicly traded company, so I can't work for a publicly traded company. Like, that's not a thing now. So if you guys are looking for people again, then yeah. So that's all I'm going to say. And let me introduce you to like half of Portland, because they're all here with their laptops drinking beer.
Basically how it went down.
Yeah. And then I got to, because something happened, and then out of nowhere, like 2 months later, I got an email from Victor that was like, hey, could you send us your stuff again? And I said, sure.
And that's how that went. I mean, I'll just say for anybody, I guess the one object lesson for anyone who's starting up a blogging network, come up with another more scalable way to handle applications.
Or figure out how it will scale, whatever method is.
Figure out how it's going to scale. Like now, I bet you there is a... an editorial evaluation as a service platform where you can just send people running through it. Yeah. At least you only look at stuff that comes above the 80% or the 85% line, the green line. Yeah. And then you just evaluate those. But, I wonder if there's something, there must be a service for that. But all that said, there was a lot of trying to understand who out there was going to be a valued contributor, and there was a lot of, you know, what pops up. I mean, I can think of several people who did come through that process who ended up as really longtime contributors. I think Megan Lavie Heaton and Chris Rawson and you and a couple others. And I can think of people who were specifically individually recruited, like Richard Gaywood and like TJ. Because they had already established a brand and a voice.
They were a known quantity before they ever...
Whether they were a known quantity or not, I mean, I think Richard in particular, we wanted what he brought to the table. We wanted what both of them brought to the table. Honestly, we wanted what you brought to the table. We wanted what everybody brought to the table back in the day. So we're coming up not long from now on the... Well, first of all, we're coming up on my time this evening, but we're coming up on the first anniversary of the... of Tua folding, if not this, it's soon. It's coming up very shortly.
It is.
Maybe it'll be a good time to get some special guests on. Maybe a Dave or somebody.
You know, I just recorded with Dave, season 2 of Homework. When it kicks off, I'm the guest.
Yay!
It was super.
Awesome.
It was super fun. We had such a good time. And he said, when we were done recording, he said, He said, when you called in, I was going to just lean into the mic and go, you are unmuted. And that was what I said. And I laughed and laughed. And Aaron was like, I don't know what's happening.
I was going to say, he was going to lean into the mic and say, caller, you're live. What are you wearing?
That would have been good, too. Yeah, because we used to do that on... actually, there's a direct line from there to here. And that is that we used to stop recording and then chat for a few minutes when we were done with the show. And then, you know, that was when we could, like, swear about all of the technical difficulty or whatever it was that was happening. And we started... and then it became, like, an event unto itself to be there once recording stopped. So we started calling that the after show. And that's how we ended up here.
And that explains the universe. That's where babies come from. Well, we have had a fun evening. We have to roll out, but we will be back with a new show in the next few weeks, assuming I don't get buried under a giant pile of snow. Always a strong possibility.
Maybe we should record before the snow, and then that way you'll have something to do. So the kids don't drive you crazy.
I can edit.
I'm going to sit in here and edit. I have to hide away.
we will be back. Please do send your USB XLR interface mixer recommendations to @Verso. Kelly, where else can the people find you?
Well, you can also email or send a note to Twitter @_the_aftershow.
Yes.
Yeah, you can find us at aftershowpodcast.com, which is the one I was trying to remember.
Also true, and you can find Kelly occasionally on themacobserver.com and on the first guest on the new season Homework, the new season of Homework. I was going to say the new season of Homeland. That's something different.
No, I'm not on that yet.
That's entirely different.
Yeah, I don't have near enough mental illness to star on Homeland. But additionally, you can sometimes find me on the British Tech Network as well. Sometimes on the Big Show, sometimes on the Mac Show. And where can people find you?
People can find me on the Twitters @MikeTRose. And you will hopefully be finding me. I hope to make it out to San Francisco a couple times in the early part of the year, in February and in March. So if that happens, I will certainly let people know and try to get a little listener meetup going on.
That'd be awesome.
It would be awesome. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. We will be back with another episode of Ye Olde After Show very soon. Have a good night.